Welcome back to the Standoff Fighting Arts Podcast. Today we have good friend and colleague of mine, Sifu Jonathan Rivera from KO Martial Arts in New York. Jonathan, welcome.
Hey, what's up, Sifu Ty?
Thank you for joining us today. We'll get going. Can you tell us a little bit, for folks that are listening, a little bit about who you are and kind of how you, what you do, how you got involved in the martial arts?
Sure. Well, my name is Jonathan Rivera. I was born in the Bronx, New York, and I was raised in Yonkers, New York. And the neighborhood I grew up in, I was generally one of the younger kids in the neighborhood. Not too many kids my age to interact with, mostly older kids. So I was forced into doing older stuff at a younger age. You know, you generally had to be tough in the neighborhood that I grew up in. A lot of fights, a lot of bullying and things of that nature. So you had to learn how to fight to protect yourself. I first got interested in the martial arts as a young boy, and I started with judo. I started in a small school in Yonkers learning judo. That school closed down. Another school across the street opened up, which was a Taekwondo school, and I was there roughly into my late teens. Top of the class, helped the Grandmaster Minher teach Taekwondo there for several years, and I just kind of took a break from martial arts for a little bit, and I got into a lot of fights, and I was a problematic child, and had to learn a lot of lessons the very hard way, learned some hard lessons, and later on in my life, I got into mixed martial arts, like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai, and I did that for a several amount of years. I became a really good fighter, and somewhere along the lines, I was looking for a different type of training. You know, I've been fighting my whole life, and I just kind of didn't want to hurt people anymore. Didn't really want to use martial art to be aggressive anymore. So I started searching out a different path, and I found
kind of growing out of the rough and tumble.
Right, I found Shaolin Kung Fu and Tai Chi, and I started studying that. And then my Kung Fu journey began from there. I went on to meet, you know, Dr. Yang and guys up at the YMA Retreat Center, which is where our relationship began 6 years ago. And I just sought out different Kung Fu instruction throughout the years, and Hung Gar, Praying Mantis, Shaolin. And I just kind of stuck with it ever since. And I've been doing Kung Fu ever since. And here I am today. And I'm teaching in the Northern Praying Mantis style and the Shaolin style.
Fantastic.
That's just kind of how I got involved.
Awesome. So for you, you know, something that we like to talk about, kind of a good focus on this podcast is talking about people's individual sort of journey through martial arts and how martial arts has shaped them or how it's changed their life. If you were to, you know, sort of round out what martial arts is to you, sort of your relationship, what has it done for you? How has it changed your life? What would you say about that?
I would say, for me, martial arts is a way of life. For me today, it has very little to do with fighting, kicking and punching, and just kind of more of how I live my everyday life. And I categorize martial arts in several different categories. I would say you need to be a martial artist, you need to be well-rounded. You should have some interest in health and fitness. You should have in stretching, meditation, physical feats and discipline, like body conditioning, hand conditioning. Forms training. Then fighting training. I think it all plays a role, you know, in shaping what a complete martial artist is. And I think the martial artist has a general knowledge in all, you know, all styles of fighting, striking, kicking, punching, takedowns, ground fighting, submission, grappling, and you know, he kind of
all has the areas, a variety
of everything. Yeah, and then also, you know, he could apply that to fighting, but also he has a wide variety and range of other skills to help himself and help others, such as breathing techniques, you know, again, the exercise, the stretching. I think all of this comes together to shape, you know, to shape the complete individual, or, you know, define what we call a martial artist, right?
Right. Well, so for you, how do you see sort of the applicability in martial arts, or how important is sort of the fighting application when someone's training martial arts. So there's so much that martial arts has to offer. And we've talked with people about sort of the benefit of martial arts training and kind of all the things that go along outside of the fighting. But to you personally, how important is it to understand the actual application and to be able to apply the fighting application of the martial arts that you're training?
Well, if you want to fight using a certain style of martial arts, for instance, let's say praying mantis is a trapping, lacking, and strategic type of fight, and I probably want to, really work the applications and understand the techniques individually. So when you string them together later on into combinations and multiple uses, you know what you're doing using that style and as far as applications and things like that. But I think it's also important just to focus on the general foundation. My teacher likes to just work a lot of basics, punching, kicking, knees, elbows, and get the practitioner used to generally striking naturally. And I think more important than even the applications and the forms is the body conditioning, the physical fitness, push-ups, sit-ups, et cetera.
Yeah, building the body strong.
Yeah, iron body training, iron palm conditioning, brick flipping, all of that stuff, balance training and rooting, because I think that, you probably wouldn't even be able to take a hit if you didn't condition the body to do so. Yeah. So I think, that plays a huge part in the defense. And the defense as well as the offense training is really conditioning the body. And then conditioning the body has to do with conditioning the mind. And some use meditation, others use moving meditation and Qigong. But I think leaving that part out would probably make a lot of your techniques really useless. If you don't have the proper conditioning in the fingertips, how effective is your eye poke going to be? If you're not conditioning your fist, how are you not going to break your hand when you punch somebody with a solid head and neck if you had to? So, I think the mental training is real important. The application and knowing them and understanding them is, to me, is definitely important to know how to use your particular style. And then if you leave out the other part, you know the application, and then it's just empty training, right? There's no breathing behind the technique. There's no meditation. Sure. And the discipline technique might teach you how to win the fight without even fighting. You might be able to be disciplined enough to use your mental concentration to be able to talk down a fight, whereas someone would say, "Hey, what the F you looking at?" And you say, "Motherfucker, I was looking at you." Whereas if you were mentally disciplined, somebody might say, "Hey, fuck you staring at? Hey, man, I'm sorry, man. You no harm. I was looking at that tattoo on your arm. That thing was really cool." And that might be a diffuser. Oh, I'm sorry, man. I thought you were looking at me or my girl next to me or whatever. Yeah. So, I think the mental training
neutralize the
and then that the aggression. Application, you need the application to go with the mental training just to kind of form the complete individual,
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned you kind of started at first at a judo school. You did some Taekwondo, you did some BJJ, some Muay Thai. What brought you to sort of land on traditional Chinese martial arts in particular?
Well, that's a good question. The jiu-jitsu school I was part of, I did private training with a very rich and wealthy, prominent real estate investor, building and club owner out of New York. And, we trained together in the gym working out. And my jiu-jitsu training was basically private lessons with, he had a group of three or four people. And we had private lessons with the instructor. His name was Coach Justin Garcia. And it was very brutal training. And Sammy had a lot of money to do things that average people wouldn't do, like pay people who didn't believe in jiu-jitsu to come in and fight with us. So it was really like a cockpit fight. It was like no holds barred. Sometimes I dreaded coming to class, not because I didn't enjoy the fight, but maybe I wasn't too enthusiastic about the sheep coming to train. Sammy would call them sheep. I got a good sheep coming for you. He find a big, strong, muscle head guy that, that didn't believe in jiu-jitsu, and they come in to try to beat us up for money, and we would be forced to use our jiu-jitsu, to defend ourselves and show them that it worked. And, at times you would really have to put a hurting on some people just to make it through. And, it was fun in the beginning being in my early 20s and stuff like that. But then there came a point after, decimating so many people and hurting people, I started I started feeling like maybe compassion, maybe there's got to be more to martial arts than, you know, just breaking somebody up and taking right. control of them. So, you know, I started doing research, and luckily at the time, the internet was becoming really popular, and you can see a lot of training on YouTube. You can see a lot of, you know, you can see a lot of insight to traditional martial arts like the Shaolin Temple and Tai Chi. And
but I yeah, never knew about far beyond what's just sort of right by your in your neighborhood. Now you can kind of see what's going on all over the world.
Exactly. So we didn't have the outlet for this kind of stuff. And, you know, as I started researching, you know, I knew Kung Fu from the movies and I always loved it. But, you know, I did some research for it and I found Shaolin Kung Fu. And then I come to find out right there in New York City where I lived, there's several official Shaolin monks teaching. So I went to, you know, I went to seek instruction, and I realized that, you know, the Kung Fu really wasn't about fighting. There was more to it. You know, I threw up my first class. I was running around doing cartwheels, things I haven't done in years. And I mm-hmm. realized how, you know, even though I was a good fighter, how out of touch I was spiritually and mentally. And basically all I was an animal, a savage, a destroyer. And, you know, I really didn't have no peace in my life. And I was looking for, you know, I was looking for the other side of martial arts. And I was just, I beat up a guy really bad in jiu-jitsu. He was a garbage worker. He was, you know, triple my size. And they brought him in to fight me. And I broke the guy up pretty badly. And, you know, I seen him throughout the month coming by the school now as a believer. But he couldn't go to work. His arm was in a sling. I broke his arm. I really messed the guy up bad. And the guys Peace. That I trained with, they praised me for it. Oh, you did a great job. You did what you had to do. So, I started feeling bad about this kind of stuff, man. Like, damn, I really don't want to hurt people no more, you know. So I started seeking out traditional martial arts, and I kind of found what I was looking for, you know, to push me in a direction. You know, some people, they go for martial arts to look to fight, but I wouldn't go to Kung Fu to look how to fight. I could already fight very well. I was looking for the other aspects of training.
Sort of that, the martial morality, the wudu, the arts side of martial arts that it has to offer.
Exactly. I had no martial morality, no martial etiquette, no martial manners. And I was just kind of like down to fight and challenge anybody, any master, anytime, any place, anywhere, you know, and just kind of destroy them. But, you know, the feeling started to change and I started to look for more within myself. And that's kind of like I found, you know, Shaolin Kung Fu, and I loved it and I stuck with it. And I learned the other side by training, and I realized there's much more to martial arts than kicking and punching. And today's society, you can't go out in the subway for no reason and just punch somebody upon the body, or, you know, kick somebody in the leg and punch them in the nose. There's consequences to your actions.
Oh, absolutely.
When you get older, and I guess you got to hold yourself to a higher standard when you're a teacher and stuff like that. And I just wanted to have more to offer than just being somebody who was just known for fighting or having a reputation in the neighborhood for epic fights and battles and stuff like that. I just kind of wanted to do more.
Yeah, so that's sure.
Kind of why my Kung Fu journey began. And I kind of learned a lot about myself from there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think this is certainly to say, you know, jiu-jitsu or BJJ as a organization or as a style, or people that are teaching it, are not all like that, of course. It's very individual to sort of what you get linked up with, sort of what you have as resources for instructors. And it can be a crapshoot. Sometimes you get, you know, an amazing instructor that, you know, we talked to Jeff Pratt, who is a Tai Chi instructor at Young's Martial Arts Association of Boston. And he's been there for 30 plus years because he loved it, and he really loved the community, and it was, you know, the right fit for him kind of early on in his martial arts training. So you're at a little bit of sort of a coin flip when you start, you know, getting involved, especially back before there was a lot of, you know, online resources to kind of see what's going on. But I think overall, if it's not a good fit, whether it's, you know, Muay Thai or Jiu-Jitsu or Kung Fu or Karate or Taekwondo, you'll kind of feel in your, you know, in your body and in your head and in your heart, you know, this isn't really what I want to be doing, even if it's something that I can do or that everybody's praising me for. You know, you got to find the path that's going to be right for you, regardless of what style it is.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I've known you for a while, and sort of on that note of, you know, having to fight and kind of trying to balance your morality or your sort of internal and external, so to speak, that yin and yang of what martial arts can offer you. You have had folks who have challenged you and who have wanted to sort of test their skills based off of whatever it's their own ego or your reputation or wanting to prove a style or something like that. What can you tell us about those kinds of experiences? Do you still now, you know, have sort of people that want to test your skills or are only interested in the fighting aspect of what you're doing in martial arts?
Good question. In my school, I live in a martial arts town. There's over 8 schools in a 4-mile square radius, from Gracie Jiu-Jitsu to the UFC gym to Taekwondo to karate to
sure.
You name it. And some of them are some really tough guys, you know, and some of them are old school. My style's better than yours, kind of an attitude. And, you know, I kind of tell everybody all styles of martial arts are good. It doesn't really matter the style, it's the person using it.
Absolutely. 100%.
Definitely the person using it. We could both know Shaolin and the same amount, just maybe I got more heart than you, or vice versa. You got more heart than me, and your use of Shaolin is probably going to go way further than mine. Or again, you know, the coward who's a 4th-degree black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is still in his heart as a coward. So, you know, until he works on conquering his fear, doesn't matter what level of Jiu-Jitsu he is or what level of martial arts he is. So, you know, you get people, you know, that come through Kung Fu, it's usually the reverse pattern. They don't know how to fight. They have to get through all the traditional training to get to the end zone where you learn how to use the martial arts. Whereas to me, it was a reverse pattern. I came in already a good fighter, but I needed to work on stretching, mental condition, flexibility, martial morality, etc. So for me, there was no urgency to learn how to fight. I didn't need to know how to use all the applications right away. I can go through the longer process, the stance training, the body conditioning, the everything it takes to be great at Kung Fu, again, because I knew how to fight. So for me, it was a no-brainer. But for other people, you know, when are we going to learn how to do this? When are we going to learn how to do that? And maybe the stance training is too long for them, or the rooting training that needs to make strong legs to have a strong foundation, the physical conditioning, the body conditioning. So some people, you know, they don't do well making it through Kung Fu, and then they'll go to another fast food, or they call them like a McDojo or something, where, you know, you're getting there from day one, you're doing arm bars and chokeholds, and, you know, you're kind of learning all these deadly moves, and you don't really know who you're teaching these deadly moves. You don't know the person, you know,
right.
you meet the rep. And that's another thing with Kung Fu. Some of the moves are so deadly, you kind of got to use the traditional training to get past the representative stage. That kind of like when you're dating a chick, you meet the representative, she's all dressed up, she's nice, she's respectful. As time goes on, you build a relationship, you really start to get to know who it is. And sometimes it might take 3 or 4 years to know the monster you're dealing with. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean,
you know, the same thing
for any relationship, you know, including your martial relationship with your students and teachers.
Exactly. So I think that the same thing goes, like Dr. Yang talked about conducting a mask. You got to kind of get through the point with a student where you take them through all this basic training, and you kind of use your mental weapons to knock off his mask, and you see who you're really dealing with. And if that person is mentally capable to receive that training, or is he going to use it for good? Or is he going to use it for evil? Is he going to use it to hurt or oppress people? Or is he going to use it to protect and serve, to help the women, to help the children? So I think when, you know, transmitting that from master to student, you always have to, you know, be wary on who and what you're transmitting, what, you know, lesson to. So that's a challenge in itself. But with that being said, as far as the challenges and stuff like that, I've had students come, they'd be really great at Kung Fu, and the fighting wasn't happening fast enough for them. So they went on down, one kid in particular went on down to the UFC gym, and he started training in Muay Thai and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and he got through his teenage years. I made him a good fighter already. But then, you know, he wanted a Big Mac. He didn't want to wait for the steak. So He went to get his fast food instruction, and he came back about a year and a half later. Sifu, I'm 18 years old now. I know Muay Thai now, and I know Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu now. You're not going to beat me up so easily anymore. And I said, oh, did you come here to take class, or did you come here to fight me? Because it seems like you came here in Muay Thai shorts with a tank top. I don't get the feeling you came here to take class with us. I think you came here to teach me a lesson. And he's like, roll out the mat. So I look at my teacher. My teacher said, fuck his ass up. You know what I'm saying? teach him a lesson. You know, but don't hurt him. So I said, all right. I rolled out the mat. I gave him what he was looking for. You know, 3 seconds later, he realized, though his skill got better, maybe at the time I was taking it very easy on him because he was a teenager. And, you know, I hit him once like an adult, and he felt the power of Kung Fu. Needless to say, he learned his lesson. But, you know, this has happened in the past. You know, just getting in the talks with people, and my style's better than yours. This is this. Let's see. And, you know, I'll take the challenges as they come. I'm confident. And it just – it depends on the challenge. I'm not going to fight somebody in the middle of the street to prove a point. But if it's, in the school – it's an honorable challenge match, and, you know, one-on-one type of situation. I'll entertain it, and it's usually in those situations where the person either learns a lesson or I learn a lesson, or we both learn from each other. So sure. I'm not opposed to the challenge match as long as it's, you know, not with malice or, you know, intent to really harm or decimate someone. If we're going to exercise and work out together and, you know, spar each other and fight each other using each other's styles, and it's, you know, it's going to be shake hands, win or lose at the end of it. Yeah, I mean, I'm down for it. I think it's healthy because at the end of the day, it's still a martial art, right? If it wasn't a martial art, and martial art is actually one part of it is fighting. And if
of course
you're not going to be doing any fighting at all, what's the difference than going to a hip-hop dance studio and learning a dance routine, a sequence? Or what's the difference between doing that and doing ballet? You really get the same benefits. If you had no intention of using it martially whatsoever, it still is a martial art, and, you know, you should have some standard of fighting to uphold within your system, whatever right. That system is, you know?
Right. I think, I mean, we've talked about before, you know, when you get into the martial arts, you're going to have to expect bumps and bruises, you know, scratches and, you know, broken noses, black eyes, swollen lips. Those things are bound to happen when you're, you know, because even when in training, you know, it's still a martial art. You're still training fighting techniques. But I think anything that's going to help you grow, as long as the mindset is there, you know, it's a mutual thing. You know, learning somebody from somebody else and sort of exchanging that information through the practice of what you're or the sort of application of what you're practicing can be good. I think when emotion gets involved and it's I'm a better than you, or the ego starts to, you know, my style is better than yours, or I'm stronger, I need to prove something, you start to get a little bit bent out of shape. You lose a little bit of that moral compass, that martial morality that we talked about. Absolutely. And certainly that's, you know, part of that, like we said, some of that is on of course the student and the person that is practicing those arts, but at the same time, some of that is on the organization or the style or the teacher that's teaching that style, the person that's passing that information on, unless it's somebody that has, and this is, I've certainly come across people who have never had any martial arts training and they want to test you because they, you know, they hear you train martial arts and they want to, you know, they want to test, oh, you train, you know, you do this, you do that. I want to test your skills just because of my own sort of unchecked ego. And it's not like the old days where, you know, you came in and you did a stance, you know, horse stance, Mabu, 1 hour every day for 6 months. And then if you show that you're mentally strong and you can build physically strong, you've shown your dedication. And now we'll slowly start teaching you the secrets, so to speak. But it's a little bit of a different time. And it's tough sometimes, even on the business side of things, in terms of what martial arts is now. You know, you have to give people enough information that they feel like they are progressing and that they're kind of getting something for their time and their money. So that's always, I think, a balance on the industry side of things. You know, for myself as an instructor and us as a school, you know, you got to balance that, but at the same time, you don't want to give somebody something that they're going to abuse in the long run.
Right, right. Well, I will say this, Brother Ty. I've been in a lot of real fights, not in the tournament, outside in the building on the blacktop, one-on-one, let's go. You know,
sure.
a lot of older kids. And I will say something here. I've never been in a fight that I learned something from that I automatically won. All the fights that I learned something from and I really learned from are the fights that I lost. The fights where someone was better than me is where I learned. And now another thing I like to add to that is I have a lot of friends in Kung Fu. And I hear this same sentence very often. How many fights you been in? I tell them. Or how many fights you been in? And I get this answer often. Luckily, I have never had to use my martial art to defend myself or another. So I'll add to it. Oh, so you never ever been in a fight in your real life? No. You never been punched in your face for real? No. Okay. So how are you teaching others how to fight and defend yourself if you don't know what it's like to get punched in the face? You know, game plan changes once you get punched in the face. A lot of things go out the window, right? So, again, it would be like teaching someone how to play basketball, but you never shot a basket, or teaching someone how to do a backflip, but you never did a cartwheel. You know, so
someone how to cook something that you've never tasted.
You never tasted. Sort of you thing. Never cook. You never cook. So, it's definitely a balance. Like, I'm not saying that everybody has to fight, but I think there's a difference between the person that's passing on an ancient system of knowledge and fighting, as opposed to the person that's just practicing and they're helping this teacher. I think if you're gonna pursue to be a martial arts teacher where you're passing on knowledge, you know, I think you have to take a bite of the fruit and know what you're eating. You know, you should have been in, a couple of real fights. I'm not saying you should go in the street and pick a fight, you know, over a car accident and start punching people. No, but you should have training brothers that are like, yo, we're gonna test our stuff, man. Here's some guideline rules. We're not going to eye poke, hair pull, and strike to the groin, but everything else goes. Maybe you're not going to black each other's eyes out, but you're gonna hit each other. You know [S2] Right. [S1] What I mean? I think it's important, you know, not [S2] No, I [S1] All [S2] Agree. [S1] The time to do that training, but to find the balance to fit it in at least once a month or a couple of times a month and, you know, not be opposed to doing it because, you know, you learned the best lessons from people who are better than you. Again, find people bigger, stronger, better than you.
Yep.
You know, that's where you learn the most. And I think you need that experience overall to be an instructor. Otherwise, I just see a lot of guys that got a lot of students and they got these big schools and, you know, they've never been in a fight and they're kind of leading people on what to do in a situation when it arises and they don't really know themselves, you know?
Yep.
So I call those McDojos or, you know, fast food, martial arts schools.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I come from a similar background. I fought a lot outside of martial arts training and when I was younger and whatever things come up. And even after I started training, you know, just being in situations where you had to fight or you had to be in a violent situation, whether, you know, you call it self-defense or what have you. And I've also competed, you know, the sort of, I find it the softer side of testing your skills because competitions can get complicated, especially in Chinese martial arts. And I think there's a big thing, there's a big discussion today about, you know, combat sport versus traditional martial arts and what's really going to help you. And, you know, they say traditional arts they're not going to help you out. You need to do, you know, something that's more applicable or more realistic training. And a lot of times they talk about combat sport or they talk about more sort of aggressive self-defense based systems, maybe Krav Maga or something like that. But whether you're doing, you know, Krav or Muay Thai or BJJ or Kung Fu or Taekwondo or whatever, I do think it's important, you know, like you said, you gotta know what you can do out of the things that you're teaching. And I think somebody said there's an old quote or a quote that goes around that goes something to the tune of ancient arts are still being taught today because the people that developed them and passed them on were able to use them when needed, and that kept them alive to be able to pass it on. But nowadays, you know, we have more and more people that are training that, like you said, they've never been in a fight. You know, they've never been hit. They've never had someone throw a punch at them outside of their own training. And I think when it comes down to it, you just have to be realistic about, you know, what you're offering and what your experience is. You know, if you're saying, oh, I can teach you how to fight, I can teach you how to defend yourself, but I've never done it myself, that's a little bit of a ruse. But, you know, if you're training for you and it, you know, you're able to stay out of it, you know, more power to you. But if you're saying you're going to pass that on, or that you understand self-defense without ever actually applying it, or you understand fighting without actually ever doing it, even like you said, I've met plenty of people that have black belts or this rank and that rank, and, you know, they don't spar. They won't, you know, not even slow or friendly. They just don't know, you know, I don't do that anymore. And that's always a little bit suspect, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's what the even the Taekwondo schools got good. You get to a certain point, even though it's Olympic sparring and it's more of a kickboxing kind of a thing, when it turns into fighting, they really don't use Taekwondo to fight. It turns into a glorified kickboxing match. But from an early stage, they're suiting each other up. They're putting headgear on. They're kicking to the head. They're feeling what it's like to use Taekwondo to fight. So regardless, oh, yeah, they're using their style to fight. And Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, they, you know, they got it. They got it down to a science where, you know, kind of like from the beginning to the intermediate to the advanced, you're learning how to use Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to take people down and roll on the ground. There's no mystical training to it. It's repetition over and over. And the stuff is effective and it works. It works for competition. And I think you get to the point in Kung Fu where you're talking about competition and stuff like that. I see a lot of fancy styles of Kung Fu. Beautiful. The moves are just so beautiful. The forms are beautiful. Oh, yeah. But when very it comes elegant time to sparring, I see a Taekwondo kickboxing match. I don't never see very few people I see fighting using their style of Kung Fu. And it's a shame, because you could say Kung Fu doesn't work, and if you put it up against an MMA guy in a cage, it's likely that it's not going to work. And reason being, I'll use my style as an example. Northern Praying Mantis Kung Fu is not a pretty, the forms aren't pretty. It doesn't look pretty. It's but it's a killing and maiming art. It's not to be used for a sport or in a ring. And what I mean right by that is the go-to combination would be triple eye poke, groin smash, throat chop, pull off the ear, joint lock the finger. That would be a normal subset combination for me, mixed up in a different order, right? Now, right, if you take that same subset and you apply it to the rules of a standard MMA match or a sanctioned cage match, there's no hair pulling, there's no eye gouging, there's no groin smashing, there's no throat punching, there's no pulling on the ear, there's no small joint lock in the finger, there's not even no small joint lock in, period. So now right here I am using my style of fighting, which is a killing and maiming style. And now you put me in the ring against so-and-so Gracie, who is a phenomenal Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner. And here we are. I can't do none of my go-to techniques. I could basically punch, kick, slam you, and fight you on the ground. Now the fight starts. You take me right down to the ground, because I don't know any Brazilian jiu-jitsu in this instant. I wouldn't know I personally wouldn't know what to do. But another kung fu master using this style, he gets taken right to the ground. He gets tapped out. The match is over. They say Kung Fu is not effective. Okay.
Right.
Now, reverse the role. Yeah,
you see it all over the place.
Right. Reverse the role. You see it everywhere. Now, give me the same Gracie guy, right? And we're going to put him in the cage, but I'm going to tell him this. Here's the rules. Okay? There's no jiu-jitsu or judo style and wrestling takedowns. And there's a two-second ground rule. We go to the ground, 2 seconds, you got to stand right back up. I just took away all of your tools, and I put mm-hmm you in a situation where you're forced to fight me using only punching, kicking, and your boxing skills, right? It could result in a different outcome than when you had all of your tools, your takedowns, your ground and pound, and your submission grappling. Now you're in my situation where I'm well versed with my hands and my feet. I do kung fu. It's a strike. I'm a predominantly striking system. If I take away the eye poking and the savage aspects, I'm using my hands, my palms, and the back of my palms. I'm in my element. I don't have to worry about you taking me down to the ground. Now here we are. We're fighting on the ground in an MMA match. You put me in a triangle choke. According to the rules, I can get out of it using traditional triangle choke escape methods. But in the street or in a kung fu match, once that leg wraps around my neck, I'm savagely biting your inner thigh. I'm squeezing your groin and popping your nutsack. And that triangle choke now becomes obsolete because we took away the rules that make that move really effective.
Right.
So I think that happens. What happens with a lot of kung fu guys today is a lot of them are not really practicing the fighting aspect. They're too stuck and focused on prearranged fighting techniques, Kam La or San Sao methods that work great in a mode of cooperation where you're letting me do the move to you, I'm letting you do the move to me. We're learning how the mechanics work. But at some point, you have to take that away when you guys know the move, and you have to try to do it on each other with resistance and non-cooperation. So right. I think the Kung Fu masters miss a lot of that, and they don't do the fighting dancing using stance work and using traditional fighting to use their Kung Fu. So they're guilty. They're guilty of that in the first instance. And then the second instance, with all respect, to all their tools are taken from them on account of rules. You know, the kind of rules, you can't poke, you can't Phoenix eye, you can't.
Yeah,
you can't
the confines of competition and.
Exactly. So
the legalities of running a fighting sport kind of competition, regardless of what it is, even traditional sports.
Exactly. So I think a lot of them get stuck in these situations where they're forced to take their style. And now the fight's going to be a glorified kickboxing match, or they come in using their style. Now they're forced to adapt to a wrestling and ground and pound situation. Maybe he knows Swajow, but you know this ground stuff. It's the modern edge of the last 75 years, 80 years. And you know, if the kung fu guy's not going to adapt to that, then he shouldn't fight in those circumstances. And with the same respect, if the MMA guy really wants to say kung fu's no good, he should fight, you know, in a match with that man with no rules, or fight someone like myself with no rules, and then you'll come to see how limited your techniques are. A lot of techniques get taken out the equation once you add biting, eye gouging, and groin striking, small joint lock, and etc. Which would be a go-to move, because somebody taught me from attacking me that there's no rules in a fight. You know, I lost two good fights in my life. One, I was winning, and I was doing a guy got on top of me, and I was doing a traditional Brazilian jiu-jitsu rollover, and the guy latched onto my cheek, and he bit my face. He was biting my face, and I couldn't get him off. He was ready to bite the skin off my cheek, and it was at that moment I realized, holy shit, I tried to just traditionally roll this guy over, like, with honor. And then I realized, we're in the street. There's no rules in a street fight. I should have dug my finger in his eye first before I tried to roll him over. But, you know, the martial morality of the, I'm not going to dig my finger in this guy's eyes. You know, this is a jiu-jitsu match, right? In my mind, I was in the street, but I was doing things like they do in the jiu-jitsu school. And I quickly realized I let his face get too close to my face and almost got my cheek bit off. And that was a lesson that I had to learn the hard way. And, you know, I got kicked I got kicked from behind once. I didn't know it was coming. I didn't see it coming. I fell. I split my head open. I had to go to the hospital, get stitches, and you know, it was a big thing. We went to fight again, and I was complaining, you attacked me from behind. Let's fight face to face now. You know, and his thing was just like laughing at me, like, yo, there's no rules in a street fight. I'll fight you face to face now, but don't be mad. Sure. I jumped you from behind. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There's no rules in the real world. You decide kind of what you're going to do and what's going to be allowed on your own, but everybody gets that same thing. And I think that, like, the situation makes a big difference. If it's competition, I mean, you look at combat sport, and I do and teach Senda, and you know, I love it. I think it's amazing. I think it's a lot of fun. I think you learn a lot from it. but I'm rooted in, of course, traditional arts and traditional Chinese martial arts. And I teach traditional Chinese martial arts. But something that combat sport does well is provide a way of sort of using those confines of the rules of a competition to train and get a little bit quicker towards the feeling of fighting, sort of that back and forth where you're able to practice the art. It's not what a real world situation, you know, if someone jumps you from behind, it's not all of a sudden, you know, a ring's going to pop up and you've got gloves on and they've got gloves on and you've got someone to ref it. It's gun and go as soon as it happens. And the other side of that is where I think a lot of the technique training can be very helpful in terms of a self-defense situation in a traditional art. It's very difficult to train those things at a live speed with full power without that chance of injury, especially nowadays where you can't be doing that kind of thing if you're worried about the legalities of it, or especially if you're running a business and you're teaching it as a school. You know, you're going to have your students, okay, first person to take an eyeball out, you know, gets the gold star for the day. You're going to get a parent running in there real quick, all of a sudden, you know, upset that their kid lost an eye, and rightfully so. So it's difficult to, you know, that same sort of feeling that you would get out of like a kickboxing style, Sanda or Muay Thai or a boxing or a judo or a jujitsu, something where you're kind of applying it the way that it's going to be practice as a sport, so like combat sport opposed to traditional fighting. And then those are sort of a broad sort of black and white, a yin and yang of the situation. There's plenty of sort of gradation there that can be brought up, but it's just an interesting thing to think about. As we're kind of getting to the end of our podcast, let's lead out with if somebody was interested in doing martial arts, someone who's never done martial arts before in their life, and they're interested, where would you direct someone? How would you say you should get started in your martial arts training? What advice would you give?
Well, the best thing for me is every style of martial arts is not for everyone. Every style of kung fu is not for everyone. Every style of MMA is not for everyone. And I think finding the right teacher that's good for you is a good start. And the way you can do that is just go watch a free trial class, or watch a class, or pay for a free trial class, or, you know, pay for some type of trial. Whatever you have to do to go down to a variety of schools, watch it, see if you like it. Watch for the instructor, see if you like the instructor. Do you trust the instructor? Do you like the training that's going on in there? And just kind of visit a variety of different schools and see what works for you. So, you know, see the reasons why you're there. Talk to the master, ask some questions. And if you don't find what you like in the first class, I don't think you're going to find it in six or seven. You know, look for one that you like in the first class. Look for a teacher that you connect with and see what the reasons you're there for. The reasons you're there for fighting, you should find a teacher that's a good fighter. If your reason is to get better at forms and you're already a good fighter, find a school that got great forms that you want to learn. I mean, you got to condition upon the individual and what your needs are, and you should take advantage of looking online, researching the different styles of martial arts, and see what kind of piques your interest and where do you think that you fit in, and then go visit those schools. And maybe it's not a fit for you when you get down to the school. So, you know, you just find a place that's right for you and start from the bottom and just take them one day at a time.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think we've said this before on the podcast, but I think it's good for people to hear. I think people that are just getting into martial arts or haven't gotten into martial arts but are interested, as well as for teachers and instructors to hear. I think you got to find what fits you. And even on that other side of it, as an instructor or someone that's done it for a long time, just because that's what's working for you, that's what fits for you, doesn't mean it's going to be right for everybody. No. And I think it's important to keep that in mind. Sometimes people try to force the square peg into the round hole, so to speak.
Right.
And if, you know, if someone's looking for, you know, if you're somebody that is more about the health aspect or is not about the fighting aspect, you know, being upfront when someone comes in and goes, yeah, I want to fight right away, or I want to be able to, you know, compete maybe in the ring or something like that, and that's not what you do, be upfront about it, you know, and vice versa. If someone's looking for something, you know, maybe a little bit deeper, they want something more fluid or something that's going to fit an idea that they have, and they want to be on the ground and you do stand up, or, you know, you do stuff, they want to do something stand up and you're doing stuff on the ground or whatever it may be honest about what you can offer, because it's going to help everybody in the long run. But finding what makes sort of you become fulfilled, I think is the most important thing when you get into that martial arts training. So you got to take your time. You got to find what feels right. You got to sort of do your research a little bit. And I think that's important for people to hear.
Yeah. And also I think as a teacher, it can't be, anybody shouldn't be able to just join your school. You know, you shouldn't be selling people to join your school. You should be looking for the right fit as well for your school. And I think often enough, we don't support each other as martial artists and stylists, but I can name several instances. For one, I called up my friend Raul Ortiz. Hey, see for Raul. Hey, Jonathan, what's up? Listen, I need a favor. What's that, buddy? I got these two students. I can't teach them, man. They need what you got over there, man. Can you take on these two students, try them out, see if they're a great fit? All right, man, I'll try them out. I'll see what I can do. And those particular people ended up finding the home where they needed to be. Not because they were smart enough to go search it out, because I was smart enough to say, this place is not right for you. You need this type of training, and my friend has that type of training.
Exactly.
You know, and I think, too, you know, you got to find, again, you got to find the right student for your school. If you're a well-rounded martial artist, like we spoke about before, and someone wants to learn ground stuff, and, you know, you're generally not doing that at that moment in the school, maybe he's interested in taking private lessons, and you can tailor a specific program for him. And if that's not something he's interested in, you need to make a recommendation, man. Look, you really want to fight the ground and submission stuff. There's no one better than the Gracies. Go find the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu school or someone that learned from them where they can really focus on that with you. It's not something we do full time here. It's something we touch upon on this level and work it at this level. And unless you're willing to be in the school and wait till we get there or take privates just to focus on that, maybe you should go down the road and learn Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And that's not a bad thing. Recommending a fellow school or something is not a bad thing, because, again, martial arts styles all got good things about them, all got bad things about them, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, so if you can make a recommendation to help kind of steer people in a direction they need to go, that could also help save people a lot of time. Maybe you gave the trial lesson. You gave them the trial lesson. They loved it. They want to sign up. But you know in your heart, that person's going to be disruptive to the learning of everybody else. Or that person is someone that could turn your particular program inside out. You have to know that, and you have to, you know, recommend somebody to a school where they wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. Absolutely. Well, Sifu Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate you coming on to our podcast.
Man, thank you for having me. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you and hear your voice, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. You too, man. It was good to talk and connect. All right, you guys, thank you so much for joining us here at the Sandoff Fighting Arts Podcast. You can find us anywhere where podcasts are found, on Google Podcasts or Google Play, Apple Podcasts. And we put our podcast out through the Anchor app. So if you are interested in submitting any kind of questions to us here at Sandoff Fighting Arts, or if you're interested in being a guest or have suggestions for people to be a guest, you can download the app. It's Anchor, and you can find us Sanda, S-A-N-D-A, Fighting Arts, through that app, and submit questions right through the app. It's really cool. They help us put everything out. So again, thank you everybody for joining us, and we will see you next time.